And we've been in this series called True Stories, taking a look at different stories about Jesus that people actually saw and then wrote them down, or people that were following God, they saw these people, they saw these stories and wrote them down. And this weekend is the last weekend, the last Sunday in that series, and the topic is grace. Today we're going to talk about God's grace and someone that saw a story. They saw something happen and they wrote it down and they thought, this is a perfect picture of what God's grace looks like. So grab your note sheet and we'll take a look at it. Here's the big idea. Grace is both a free pass and ticket to change. So it's both. It's like a free pass, ticket to change. And for a working definition, if you're a note taker, write this down in the margin somewhere. Here's grace, working definition. Being loved for free and getting help to change. So as we look at this story today, it's being loved for free, getting help to change. Definition of grace, which can be like a free pass, but also help us change. I know how I can get heartburn. How can I get rid of the heartburn? Well, we'll find out today. Like, I know how I get problems. How does the grace of God help that change? So let's jump right in. And I'm going to read the story a little differently today. I'm going to sort of read it scene by scene. So they used to call this back in the day verse by verse teaching. We're going to look at the story scene by scene as if we were all in the crowd seeing it together. It was unfolding. So here we go. We're going to break it down. Look in your notes. At dawn, he appeared again in the temple courts, talking about Jesus, where all the people gathered around him and he sat down to teach them. So Jesus sets up shop on the patio of the temple, or the big church building, and that's where he starts to talk with people, and this huge crowd comes around him to see what he has to say. But he doesn't take him inside of the church building, and there's a reason for that, because during Jesus' time, people had strayed away from religion. They didn't want anything to do with church. They didn't set foot in a place like this that had anything to do with church. They didn't want anything to do with religion. They wouldn't go anywhere near the temple because they felt like they didn't measure up, or they were disqualified. The bottom line is they didn't feel welcomed. And so Jesus sets up shop out on the patio. He's not embarrassed that he's a church guy. He goes to church. So he sort of like tips his hat towards it, but he's out on the patio. And the question is, why would people be willing to go be with Jesus and not church? And some of the problems then are the same problems that we have now. I mean, church is on the decline in the United States and in our country. And if you go to Europe, several years ago, my family and I traveled around Europe. We got backpacks. We stayed in hostels and rode railroad cars. It was a blast. But one of the things I noticed is when we'd go into different areas, there'd be these temples, these cathedrals, these huge church buildings. They were amazing, except for nobody was there. I mean, they were completely empty. And these were places at one point that were teeming with people that followed Christ, and completely empty. They were like a museum. They gave tours to see all the incredible art, but nobody was there. If you go to Canada now, it's almost completely unchurched. Just north of us, nobody goes to church on Sundays. It's almost irrelevant. And it's definitely sweeping through our country. And you say, well, how come? Well, there's lots of different reasons. One of them is, because of harsh judgments. And I mean, our reputation is not that great. And one of the reasons for that is that media and entertainment for years now has been sort of exposing the bad side of church. And when I say church, I mean each and every kind. And so when you have, imagine if somebody followed you around for a month and all they did was show your bad side. And they put that on Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat. That's all they saw was your bad side. That's been going on for a long time in our country, and the church has a bad side. And that's all people have been seeing is the bad side. I mean, what would they think of you? What would your reputation be if that happened to you? Because that's definitely what's happened to church. Just the bad side has been seen, and there's a bad side. And then you mix that in with colleges and universities that for the longest time now have been saying, this idea that there's a God that cares about us and created the whole universe and made this planet and all that has such nonsense. And people run into that at 18 or 19 years old and it rattles them. And then there's just people's personal experience that have been hurt by somebody at church or somebody religious, or somehow they've come in contact with religion or church and they've been hurt by it. He had it all up, and we have a pretty stinky reputation. And so people are staying away. They're not looking to church for answers. They, you know, interested in God, but not if they have to go through church. And you might be thinking, well, gosh, I mean, you're a pastor. Shouldn't you be putting a little better spin on this? No. No spin. Hey, if the forecast is for rain tomorrow, I want to know that so I can pack my umbrella. I mean, our situation is people are not looking at church or religion any longer in our country. But the good news is they are interested in Jesus. And it was the same thing they were dealing with in his day. So he sets up shop on the patio. Now, if you're following Jesus, where do you set up shop? Where is a sort of a neutral place you can be with people? Sets up shop on the patio. Let's keep going. We're in this crowd now. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery." So here we go now. The religious people come barging into this situation. You know, here's this crowd there with Jesus, and they come storming in, and they barge in, and they start to do what religious people always do. They feel they have the right to tell other people how to live their life, and if you don't live your life like they say, they penalize you. And they have, you know, they come barging in, and they have this woman in tow. And can you imagine if you were in the crowd, you know, you're like, I mean, and we don't know anything about the woman at all other than a couple of things. Number one, we know she's been caught red-handed. So she's guilty. And number two, she's alone. In the story, nobody from her family speaks up. None of her friends speak up. Nobody says anything on her behalf. She's just standing there with these religious people. And it says that they make her stand before the group. So just imagine if we were all in the group or the crowd that day and they make this woman. Do you know, part of the problem is people that are super religious believe if they make you do something, it'll change your heart. It's a story about the little girl. You know, kept doing things throughout the morning that her mom told her not to, and her mom says, "Don't do that," and she does that, "Don't eat that," and she eats that. And finally, her mom takes a chair and puts it over in the corner and says, "You come over here and you sit in this chair right here." And so, you know, she takes her by the hand and takes her over there. "Now you sit right here," and you know, the little girl sits down and she walks and she turns around, and the little girl's standing up. And she walks, and says, "Mommy told you to sit in that chair." You know, so she takes her and puts her in the chair, and she goes a little ways, and she turns around again, and boom, she bounces right up. You ever had one of those in your family or tried to raise one of those? And so, you know, she goes back, she says, "And I'm not playing this time. I will ground you till you're 50 years old, and you're every doll you have, every toy you have, I'm taking away the iPad like you're done. You get out of that chair one more time, you're going, like, it's going to be bad for you." The little girl sits down, and her mom walks around. She turns around, and, "Okay," you know, the little girl sitting down. And then she turns to walk around. The little girl says, "Mommy." She turns around. The little girl says, "I'm standing on the inside." You know, you can't make anybody do anything in a way that it'll change their heart. And that's a problem with religion. If I make you follow these rules, if I make you dress a certain way, if I make you live your life a certain way. And so they make the woman stand before the group. A question for you. Has anybody ever tried to make you do anything and they had the power to do it? And what did it cause? And can you imagine how embarrassing this must be for this woman? I mean, not only is she caught red-handed, but now they make her stand before the group and she's all by herself, feeling alone. Let's keep going in the story. "And the law of Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. Now what do you say?" They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis of accusing him. Now, first of all, aren't you glad that God can't be caught by surprise? I'm caught by surprise all the time. You know, something happens in my life and I'm not expecting it and it catches me by surprise and I act poorly. You know, when's the last time something caught you and you reacted or responded in a way and afterwards you walked away and said, oh, I wish I wouldn't have said that or done that. But it caught you by surprise. Jesus is out on this patio talking to this group of people and they drag this woman up there and they try to catch him by surprise. And they're trying actually to trap him. They're trying to find out, will he be too lenient or will he be too strict? Or maybe another way to say it is they're trying to put Jesus into a box by finding out where he stands on one issue. Let's see where he stands on adultery. And as soon as we know that, we'll know everything about him. And that can be a problem too. Some of the hot topics in our day, the social issues of our day, and someone wants to know, well, where do you stand on this? I saw an interview of a singer that is a Christ follower recently, and gosh, she's doing just great. And she was on this radio show, and someone, like, you know, in the interview, right off the bat, you know, asks her, well, where do you stand on same-sex marriage? I mean, it was like, we're going to sum up your entire life. We're going to decide everything about you. We're going to put you in a box based on how you answer this one question. Be ready for it. If you're a Christ follower, it's on its way. There'll be a lot of people that will try to sum up the Christ followers on where they stand with one issue, and you don't have to let them. Jesus does the wise thing. He doesn't even answer it. He doesn't even engage. Here's like a way of thinking. If somebody isn't really trying to dialogue, there is no point to engage with them. When they're just trying to trap you to put you into a box, there is no sense in engaging with them and talking with them because they're not there to dialogue with you. They're trying to trap him. Well, is he too lenient or is he too strict? And what's coming towards us is a lot of social issues and hot topics that people are going to decide everything about us based on where we stand on that. So that's what's happening. Let's keep going. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. And so can you imagine now we're all in the crowd and we just came to see Jesus. We heard some things about him. We were interested in God and so we thought we'd go listen to him. A little closer to the church than we want to be, but at least we're on the patio. And then these religious people come barging in and have this woman in tow and she's all alone. And by the way, listen to this now. And she's all alone. She hasn't said anything at all. She's all in front of the crowd. They're not bringing her to Jesus. They're not pointing her to God to try to get healing or help. They're looking for justice and judgment and penalty. And they're looking for her to be receive her consequences. And that's our reputation, too, in the church. It's like the only thing we're really interested in, church people, all they really want to do is point me towards God so I'll get what's coming to me. And Jesus sees this whole situation going on. And can you imagine if we were in the crowd? I mean, this is like disruptive, you know. And then all of a sudden, like he bends down on the ground and it looks like he's writing something in the dirt. So can you imagine if you're in the crowd? I mean, you're thinking, wow, what's he going to say? And what's going on here? Maybe you know the woman. You're not sure if you should say something. Maybe gossip's going on. I had a feeling that I saw the way she looked. And, you know, and then he bends down and he starts to write in the ground. And I can imagine if it was me in the crowd, I'd be like, what's he doing? Hey, look out. I want to see what he's writing. Is he writing something? Is he going to answer him? And all of a sudden, you know, what would the crowd be doing? They're trying to figure out what's he saying. And this is a picture of grace. By not answering the critics, he's able to take everybody's eyes off the woman and give her just a moment to breathe. I mean, he just goes and writes a few words in the ground, and all of a sudden, everybody's wondering what he's doing. And this woman that's all alone there, like nobody's with her, all of a sudden, she just gets a moment. And here's something to write in your notes. People matter more than principles. And that's what grace does. I mean, there is a principle of adultery, and it's hanging in the air. They've caught the girl red-handed. And like right at the moment that he could say something about adultery, instead he does something about the person. And all of a sudden, nobody's looking at her, nobody's talking about her. She just gets a moment to catch her breath in front of everybody. So let's keep reading, see what happens next. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "If any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." So, you know, this has come into our culture. You know, be the first one to throw the stone, or I'm not going to be the first one to throw the stone. It was from this story they came from. They keep questioning him and questioning him and questioning him. And what they're looking for is an easy answer. What they're trying to get at is just like, give me the answer on what we're supposed to do about this situation. Like, we know what the rules are. And part of the thing that religion does is it doesn't ever want to struggle with people or go through the story. It doesn't want any of that. It just wants to just jump in and move right to the punishment, move right to the justice. Like, give us the answer. And grace doesn't do that. It's interesting that Jesus doesn't give him an answer. He almost kind of gives him a question. Or at least he gives him something to think about. Instead of answering it and saying, well, you know, here's the rules, here what we're supposed to do, within the struggle, he puts them in the middle of it. All of a sudden, he just gets everybody involved and gives them something to think about. Are you sure you want to do this? When I was in sixth grade, I hit Jamie Smirtz in the head with a rock. We were having a rock fight right in my neighborhood. He was at one house, I was in the other. We got in a big rock fight, and I was a little better thrower than Jamie. I got him right in the head with a rock. It was a pretty good size one, and just chucked it and got him right in the head. And I'll never forget Jamie. He was a freckle-faced kid. He was looking at me, and that rock just banged him right in the head. Even from where I was standing, I could hear the thud. And like any kid my age, my first thought was, whoa, good shot. But I will never forget the sound of that rock hitting him in the head and when Jamie went down. And my second thought was, I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I hadn't knocked him down like that. And think about this now. We're all in the crowd right now. And here's what grace does. He said, are you sure you want to be the one to throw the rock? Are you sure you want to live with this the rest of your life that you did this? Are you so sure that you're the person that should bring this justice? Interesting, oftentimes grace will put me in this position that just about the time I'm ready to penalize for someone else for their sin, if I'll just take a moment and pause, it's when I can see mine the clearest. So grace shows up. He says, I'm going to give everybody an opportunity to think this through before you do it. So let's keep reading. Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. And I do wish that we cared and loved older people more in our culture. I wish we did. I mean, Jesus now gives everybody a chance to catch their breath. Now everybody in the crowd gets a moment to process. Do I really want to do this? I know that girl. I remember her. Am I so sure that she deserves this? Everybody gets an opportunity to process. And the older ones, they must have been thinking back through their life going, no. I'm out of here. I don't want to do this. Maybe they thought, wait a second. I'm not sure I trust the religious people that much anyways. I'm not so sure I trust myself that much. I'm out. And as they leave, the younger ones watch them. And they say, those guys have been around a long time. I think I'm out too. The grace of God will always give me a moment to reflect before I judge and penalize someone. It'll always give me a moment to step back and say, am I so sure about this? So let's see what happens next. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." Interesting, because it does seem like she's getting off the hook. And what a crazy thing for God to give someone a vote of confidence before they deserve it. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, she hasn't really done anything, and Jesus gives her a vote of confidence as he sends her off. And it would be easy to look at this story and say, well, you know, she's getting let off the hook. And isn't that the problem with grace? Because it can feel like, well, I'm just letting them off the hook if I do that, if they don't get the punishment that they deserve. It seems that way in the story. It seems like he's just letting her go. But what if he's not letting her go? What if he's actually sending her with a completely different perspective? And he's sending her with a vote of confidence and a reality. I mean, when I read that, I was thinking to myself, well, that's impossible to go and not sin. And then I thought, well, maybe that was his point. Maybe Jesus was saying, I'm sending you off with a vote of confidence, and I'm telling you to do something, and it won't be long before you realize you can't do it, and then you'll need me. And so off she goes. Now, a couple takeaways right in your notes. What's the story all about? What do we leave with today? Number one, people matter more than principles, but principles still matter. So that's really the problem, and that's what we're going to face. I mean, sort of like this whole talk today is sort of also in the context of he's out on the patio, so religion and church are in trouble, and like, where is the hope in it? And part of the problem is you sort of have two camps. You have the I care about the people camp, I have a heart for the people camp. It doesn't matter what they do or what they're into, I just love the people and I'm all about the people, I care about the people camp. And then you have the principal camp, and those are the people that say, but this is what the Bible says, or this is what God said, or this is what our religion said. These are the principles that have to be followed. And those two camps don't get along very well, and they don't talk very well. And here's the thing, based on your wiring, you probably lean towards one or the other. Your personality, the way you see the world, the way you bring, you probably lean more towards, I want people to be happy and satisfied and get what they want. Or you lean more towards rules are rules, principles are principles. These are things that have to be followed. And so we end up in either or of them. And here's what I want to say. The grace of God is big enough to bring them both together. People matter most, but principles still matter. Like, here's what's crazy. If I take this notebook like this and I drop it, the principle is going to happen every single time. Jesus doesn't say that the principle of adultery doesn't matter anymore. He doesn't just say it doesn't. Like he tells her, don't commit it. Adultery will wreck a person's life. It's a principle. It's relational. You can't get away from it. It'll tear up a family. It's like putting a hand grenade into it. Adultery just destroys everything. It's such a difficult thing on families. That's a principle. You can't get away from that. But he sees a person. And Jesus is able to like work with both of them at the same time. Now, that's something people that follow God have to offer that others don't. We can say principles, they still matter. We don't just like ignore them, but people matter more. And the grace of God can be large enough to bring them both together. Now, the second thing, right in your notes, Jesus gives her an order, not a suggestion. And this one, I'm kind of putting myself out there. This one can be a problem for me because sometimes, and lots of suggestions. So you're going on vacation and, you know, you're going to Hawaii and I make a bunch of suggestions to you because I've been there. I've gone to a restaurant. I suggest what they, you know, have on the menu that you do. I mean, suggestions are great. We all do it. But they're different than an order. An order comes from someone that is your superior. And it has to do with like chain of command. And so when someone gives you an order, now my problem because of my background and issues with authority, sometimes when God gives me an order, I kind of see it like a suggestion. You know, he says for me to do something, he gives me a clear order what I'm supposed to do. It's not a suggestion. But I sort of like, somehow in my mind, I sort of process it like I don't really have to do it. It isn't something that he's just sort of saying this might be the way to go. It might be best. And they're very different. And he gives the woman an order. Not a suggestion. He said, you know what might be a good idea? I mean, just give it some thought. Adultery, maybe next time don't. It's an order. He's saying, don't live that way anymore. And so I wanted to ask the question today, are you ready to make Jesus your boss? I mean, can he be your superior? Can he give you an order? Way different than a suggestion. Could he say something to you and you would take it as he's telling me this is what he wants, and when he tells me something, I trust it's in my best interest and I'm willing to do it. Now here's the bottom line right in your notes. Grace is a gift to win my loyalty. I was thinking the other day, like, it's my need for change that turns me to Jesus, but it's the grace that he gives me to change that keeps me with Jesus. What keeps me loyal to him is how he keeps showing up in my life. And in this story, his grace, the grace of God, generates loyalty. And that's why he can say to her, you don't have to live this way anymore.